Do you think I need to go and paint that yellow BR, bruv? Arms house to your mum's house. Arms house to your mum's to your mum's to your mum's arms house to your mum's house. Arms house to your mum's to your to your to your arms house to your mum's house. This is
yo
episode. What's going on?
All good, man. What episode 97, right? Yeah. Yes, 97.
Yeah, episode 97. 100%.
Mom's house to your mom's house. Bring mom's house to your mom's house. Seems like forever since we've done it here in the house.
I know, yeah, it's feeling good though, man. I'm pleased about that.
Am I loud enough, Liam? I'm all right. Volume wise, yeah. Can you hear me? Okay,
yo. Yeah. Very loud and clear, old boy. How about myself? Okay, check one, yeah. Two to the three.
You're fine. Yeah, all good, brother. All right, we've
on
got
the MIC.
Lots and lots to chat about. We got music. We got graph critique coming at the end. We haven't done graph critique in a while. Oh no, we did a couple last episode. On the rooftop. That was a fun episode up on the roof.
We're very tired, so we're having an episode at all where it all started.
Exactly. Some of you might have noticed on the Instagram we linked up with Trappy not too long ago, about a week ago now, right?
Trappinator.
Yeah, so he doesn't, I mean, he calls it a roadcast, but it's not really long form. We sat with him for like, what, fucking an hour and a half, 2 hours? How long were we there?
Yeah, it was
we
a long one. Fucking hell, Trap. It was a long one, son!
We were there for fucking ages, man. We recorded a shit ton of chatting. I mean, but he snips them up into like a minute, 2 minute bits, and he puts them up on the Instagram. I don't know where else he puts them up, but so if you want to go check that out, go follow.
I think he said he just does it on the gram, you know?
I think
he's
so.
He's just busting it on the gram.
But also YouTube Shorts, I think he
but he's
does
a top well. Gazer, that gazer. He's a top boy. He's
yeah, Trappy 724.
He's a proper lemon squeezer.
At Trappy, T-R-A-P-Y 7246. The link will be below. Go follow him on Instagram if you don't already. And I think that's a good link up as well, because he's quite, you know, he's got quite a few followers. Or he used to. I mean, he's got a mad history. I didn't really know much about him, man. I mean, obviously, I've seen his graph all over London and beyond. And I've started following him maybe a couple years ago on Instagram. He's an entertaining guy. You know what I mean? He's a funny fucker.
He is a joker.
He does tattoos and all that stuff. But I think, like, I heard that he said to us he had a page that had 50,000 followers. I think he was on TV for something. I have no idea what all that stuff is, but apparently he had big following, all that, and then he lost it all because he was being too edgy on the gram, so it got taken away from him or something. Again, I have no idea, but now he's rebuilding his brand and he's doing his thing and he's got big plans for the future. So yeah, follow him, and he's a funny fucking guy as well. He's a joker.
Yeah, he is a top guy. He's a funny guy. He's got some good stories.
He's got like mad tattoos on his face and the gold rims on his teeth and shit. And yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, go check that out, man. What else been happening? You were wanting to talk about the boxing, right?
Oh yeah, AJ got knocked the fuck out.
Yeah, I saw that, man.
We got a Latina getting a beer out the freezer.
Tell her hello. What's up?
Man, he says hello.
Hi. How are you?
All good.
He says he's very good. Thank you. Thank you so much.
But yeah, AJ got knocked the fuck out, man. Shit, I only saw the highlights.
AJ got knocked the fuck out.
It was kind of humiliating. He got knocked down in the first round, second round, third round. Shit.
There was this... like interview, but you know, they get the fighters into interview now, like sit them around a table and stick it on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. The warm-up.
Literally head to head.
Yeah.
They're quite good. It's all fucking brilliant.
Just a high part.
AJ kind of schooled him, like lyrically.
Hold on.
On the ting.
I know AJ. Obviously, I've heard of AJ. I've never heard of the other guy. Who is the other guy? Have you got a little
Daniel
bit of...
Daniel Dubois.
Yeah, what's he done? Like, where's he from? What country? And
he is from England.
Ah, okay.
So it's a like clash of two English heavyweight boxers.
Mm.
And
he's like been in the wings. People have been saying like he can go on to have a wicked career. Like watch out for him. But then he lost to Usyk, who's like that ridiculously sick boxer.
Who AJ beat right?
Everyone who's unbeaten. No, who beat AJ twice.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And beat Tyson Fury. And then said, yo, I'm chilling. Do you know what I mean? What? Like he's the bad man from Ukraine.
And he's a joker as well.
And he lost against this guy, something Joe from New Zealand, who's like a decent boxer.
Uh-huh.
A very good boxer. So he had them two losses. But people were saying, you know, like his coaches and that were saying that he's gonna be fucking sick, Because you see the size of him.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like kind of as big as AJ in that, but he's, you know, he's 27, which in heavyweight is very young.
Yeah.
Like very young. Not very young, but very young.
Yeah. So they're in the
Tyson Fury's 35, you know, AJ's 34, 35, like heavyweights, kind of 32, 33. That's like at your peak of being a heavyweight. Because you've still got a bit of everything. Speed and power and this and
experience and knowledge. And,
you got a bit of everything. Yeah.
So they're
So he went in there and this like that thing where they sit around the table. Obviously, it all kicks off. I don't know if it always has to kick off, but obviously it kicks off.
They want to get the ratings. They want to get people watching.
So exactly.
Kick off. Yeah.
All of that shit.
Yeah.
But AJ said, I'll wrap this chair around your face. Don't disrespect me, Dan. Like, tried to be like, well, bad man, like, well, cool. Like, don't disrespect me, Daniel. Like, don't disrespect me. I will wrap this chair around your face, but don't disrespect. And Daniel Dubois was just saying, who are you to talk to me like that? Who do you think you are? I'm not intimidated by you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, AJ acted like a big bad man. And then he goes in that ring. And as soon as I saw Dubois ring walk, I was thinking, oh, looking like AJ. I don't know what it is about AJ. Like he's a likable person. He's a likable guy.
Yeah.
He's beaten Klitschko. You know what I mean? He got beaten by Andy Ruiz. He's like that fat Mexican geezer. Fucking that geezer beat him. You know what I mean? He got beaten by Usyk. And then he knocked out that mixed martial art fighter in one round. That was his last fight. But that guy was like, that was like his second professional boxing fight.
Mm.
And then so he had to knock him out.
What's been AJ's most convincing win? Because I can't think of one where AJ just pummeled the shit out of some cunt.
Oh, no, yeah. There'd be dudes like a couple of dudes like that, journeyman dudes when you come up. He did beat some good guys. He's Olympic gold medalist.
Oh, yeah. He was in the Olympics, yeah.
Just, anyway, when I saw Dubois' ring walk, I thought, holy shit, he looks like, you know what I mean? He's actually quite a likable guy.
Mm.
You see, when they ask him questions and that, he's just like, yeah, I came to the, you know, it's got nothing like, you know what I mean, fake about him.
Mm.
This genuine open geezer. And he fucked him up on the first round. On the first round.
Yeah, fucked him up, man.
Yeah, his ancestors felt the tump. There's one of them ones that just...
Yeah.
Massive tump. And AJ got through it, but went down like four times in five rounds.
Nuts.
Absolutely schooled. Some of the comments are so joke.
People saying he's like really he was like Ray Gunn. You know Ray Gunn when she was breakdown?
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
And she's on the floor and they're like, it's like, that was what he looked like.
Because he did one of those ones as well. You know, if you're playing football or whatever and your ankle goes over like that.
He rolled his ankle, yeah, fuck.
Oh,
yeah,
I hate that. Oh, but man. He managed to blag it a bit.
Yeah. The thing what gets to me about AJ, man, of course, he's a great athlete. And yeah, like you said, he came from the Olympic gold and all that stuff. And he's like a pretty boy. He's really handsome. All the ladies love him. And he's, you know, he speaks well. He's eloquent and he's, you know, nice. He's a nice guy. He comes across as like a nice, genuine dude. So I can see why everyone fawns over him. But I never found him to be intimidating at all. I never saw a fight where he completely dominated like a really good boxer. He avoided fighting Fury. Everyone wanted to see AJ versus Fury. And he just like, and I know Fury was all up for it, man. And AJ was just blagging it saying, nah. I don't know what reasons he gave, but they weren't convincing.
I just never understood. Like, I don't know. I guess he's just a good boxer.
I've seen him pummel boxers. Yeah. Just can't remember who they are because he just walked through them. But
that was it. When AJ got sparked by the fat Mexican dude, like when he hit the top of his head.
Andy Ruiz.
Ruiz, I was like,
absolutely murked him.
I loved that, man. That shit was amazing to me, man.
Murked him.
But anyway, do you think that's the end of AJ's career? He'll be back.
He says it's not. He says it's not.
I reckon he'll be
but
back.
Fuck me. I mean, I reckon, like, I'd be thinking about it.
It was humiliating, man, from what I saw.
It was like meeting your little brother's bully. Do you know what I mean? Who's like three years younger than you and just fucking devastated, like bullied him.
Fucking his shit up.
That's what I get about AJ. All these kind of chats about like, yeah, no, it's a different AJ this time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm more serious now. Do you get me? Like, yeah, man's on it. We're going back and we're coming again and we're built up. And then within like, during that fight, he's getting licks. AJ, you are getting licks, bruv. And you're looking to the side and like chatting to people and like going like this. You know what I mean? I mean, chatting to the crowd. Sticking his tongue out against Dubois and all this, like smiling when he's getting licked. So, bruv, you look shit.
Yeah.
Someone's like, that geezer dominated you, bruv. Don't know what all that's about when you're trying to say you're all serious. This is a new AJ. As soon as you get licked, he doesn't know what to do. Like, he doesn't hold. He doesn't stand with his hands up. He's like, when he walks up to Dubois like this, his right hand's here. And even worse, you never walk in throwing an uppercut, but you never, it's never your one punch. It's never the first punch like this. And that's why, man, he didn't even need much space. He just complete 100% accuracy on the bottom of the chin. Just from a heavyweight geezer. Not even a massive like swing, just a perfect boxing punch.
That's what I was
like
a
game of boxing. And fucking there and just, you saw how fucked he was. Bang, that was ridiculous.
Couldn't get up, man.
I would be like, yo, man, I have to allow it now.
I mean, look.
Just go and eat tacos with Andy Ruiz and do like Google YouTube videos about that.
I mean, AJ is always going to be good. Like I said, he's a good looking guy. He's good on TV and stuff. So he'll always have a career, whatever he does. But at the end of the day...
Yeah, AJ's all right already, bruv. He's probably worth like 20 mil or something like that.
No, I know. But with boxing, it's all about who's going to sell tickets, really, at the end of the day. And I think AJ could still, if he find if it's Tyson Fury or someone like that, I reckon they could they could make it happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. People still buy it.
Yeah.
And do you know what the English are kicking off about? I see some of those like comments. Oi, what's going on with playing like the Saudi national anthem? Yeah, before, because this is in England, bruv. I think this is so brilliant, bruv. You could hear them in the background. It's so dope.
Wait, it was in Riyadh, right? It was in
Saudi. No, it was in Wembley, bruv.
Oh, it
I can
was.
See it from there. Yeah, Wembley.
Oh, sick.
Okay. And what were we just talking about? Saudi geezer's there.
Yeah,
and he's organised it. But if he wasn't organising it, none of this shit would be happening. But he's made some sick fights happen. This geezer.
Yeah,
I don't know if he is the prince or something like that. Probably. And because he's like your highness, like they played his shit first, you know what I mean? So before God Save the King, that was before that, all that shit, you know what I mean? They played his tune first.
That's a pimp move from the Saudi guy.
Hey, that is a yellow imchi. You know what I mean? Big
bro.
Man move. A big man move.
That's deep. All right, man. I mean, allow boxing, man. You said you had some news articles or something.
Yeah, but AJ got busted in the face, bro. It looks so bad.
Yeah.
It looks so bad.
It did.
That's the thing about boxing, man. Imagine playing football and you get spanked 6-0. There's like 11 of you. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All played shit. All the coach is going to go mental at you. If you get knocked out on the fucking television like that, I've always thought it's so joke.
That's part of it.
If he did a million things, I would never remember them. I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I'm going to remember
the way he went down.
The Mexican hitting him, man. That's even worse, I think. Just, he was so fat and short. You know what I mean? That guy.
You get, like, you get a couple of losses like that in boxing. You lose against a fat Mexican geezer.
Yeah. It's over. Yeah.
Fucking hell. I just remember him for stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a fickle world, man. You know,
but he's gone out there, boxed, risked his life and made millions of fucking pounds, bruv. Like,
yeah,
it's way more than I was just thinking about. Am I being a dick saying he's worth 20 mil? AJ's probably worth fucking 200 mil.
At least over 100 mil. That's without a doubt, 100%. With all his fucking deals with Adidas and fucking whoever else, man, he's making bare money, man, without a doubt.
WalesOnline.co.uk. Wales Online. Yeah. They say 63.5 million.
Okay, well, there we go.
Which is a lot of money. But what do they know in Wales about AJ, bruv?
Oh,
the
man.
Watford Don.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah. So I was... fuck AJ, bruv. You got knocked out. We're moving on, bruv.
Let's go. Wait, hold on.
Listen. If AJ sees this, I'm not bringing up sound. Only Amber's bringing the. I'm not bringing up sound.
Come on, let me at him. I'll fuck him up.
Jesus Christ! Yeah. Imagine seeing AJ around London and shit like yo.
Mate, his hands are so big. He's probably just backhand slap both of us in one go. Man, we go flying, bro. Like the Street Fighter, you know the end of Street.
Yeah, he's a fucking unit, isn't he, AJ? Fuck.
But he's a teddy bear. He's a nice guy, man. He won't kick
off. So moving on from KJ.
Yeah.
I was thinking, are these two kids writers?
Yeah.
Because someone went and... do you remember me, Nick in the Bus?
Yeah.
These guys battered it, bruv. They were in New York...
Yeah,
they went in and started a train and managed to drive it like 50 meters
from the yard.
I don't know if from somewhere in Queens.
Okay.
NY teens joyriding and crashing a subway train.
Oh no, they were arrested. Two teens arrested after stealing NYC train and crashing it. Jesus.
Fucking is that what your one says? Stealing it.
Yeah. Joyriding. This is on the BBC News Network. New York police have arrested two teenagers they suspected of joyriding and crashing an empty subway train. A girl and boy, both aged 17, are charged with criminal mischief and reckless endangerment. They are accused of entering and operating the train, then caused a collision, after which they fled on foot. No injuries were reported in the incident at Briarwood Station in Queens shortly after midnight on 12th of September. It remains unclear how the pair gained access to the train. They were able to drive the vehicle about 50 feet, 15 meters. Okay, that's pretty much it now, man.
Some geezer goes on to say, you know, how do they operate the train?
I mean, isn't it just a lever going forward and a brake?
No, I don't think it is, bro. No, I think surely it's not just like... Everyone says that, isn't it? You get paid 50 grand a year, yeah? And you just go like that, bro. Do you know what I mean? And then you just pull it back.
No, it takes heavy... I've got a mate who's a train driver. He drives for Southern Railways or whatever. It takes, you know, years of training and all that stuff, of course. But if you just want a train to move forward... obviously the training comes with how to stop in time and what, you know, all the training. But like, I think just to move the train forward, if
you're going to just want, there's only one controller. No, just
if the train is running, I'm picturing it that the train was pulled into a station and the driver left for some reason. Yeah. And then they went like, fuck it. And they jumped in the train and then the train was already running and everything. They didn't have to switch it on.
They just pushed the lever.
You know what I mean? Maybe they pulled a few things, pressed a few things. They went like that. And then it went, and they went, hey. And the next thing they know, they're like, fuck, we can't stop it. And then they're like,
I can't believe no one's done that in
It must have happened. It must have happened in London.
That's somewhere. What I did. But that's exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
But then I can't think of any... story I've heard where someone was joyriding with the London Underground.
Yeah, no, I can't think of one either, but...
And surely we would have heard it a million times over.
True. Although we've said this before, I used to, on my way home from school on the district line in the 90s, you'd go to the last carriage and break into the driver's bit, which would always be at the end of the train. You could always sit in the driver's seat and, like, you know, bun a zoot, but you wouldn't press any buttons.
No, you had to get a reach in the glass.
Yeah, scratch it in.
You had to get a reach in the glass.
Yeah.
That was sick. Sick. I've done that. Do you remember when you could push the fire extinguisher?
Exactly, yeah. Reach in.
And then reach in and undo that and then just go in. Yeah. I've done that and gone in and looked at the glass and there's been theme reaches scratched in already. I swear on my children's life I've done that. And I was like, yo, boy. But, then, you know, people used to go from Gunnersbury to Richmond to go to Richmond College.
Yeah.
Surfing on the rails on the back.
Yeah. Jump on the back or jump on the rails.
Surfing on the rails, bruv. They used to jump onto the back of the district line and then jump down. And I don't know what they would, but fuck. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I was never a daredevil like that, man. Like trying to like risk my shit, like jumping on the top of a moving train and shit. Fuck all that, man. But
I never did that. I think Buds might have done that.
Mate, I'm in the Yan episode.
I think Buds might have done that. Some of the FLS lot,
We used to, on the last train, open the door so that you'd see the tracks going away from you because obviously you're on the last carriage at the back. And then we'd open the door, catch tags on the door, but then we'd grab the thing, take a toke on the zoot, hold it in like that, and then like grab the rails on either side of the door and then lean forward like that, like just so your head is over the track.
Stick it.
Blow the smoke like that, come back.
What's that got to do with the marijuana? That I love that when you're reunion.
Yeah. No, you get a head rush, man. You get a head rush, bro.
You'd get a head rush if you were just breathing oxygen doing that.
True, yes.
You know what I mean? What you got to do? Yeah, you got to hold the zoot. Yeah, you've been doing so many things like that.
Yeah, just hold it in.
Hold the zoot. Yeah. What was that? Everyone passed the zoot around. You could blow it out when it got back to you.
It got. I used to call it pass the dragon or something.
But that was like the heroin version.
Yeah, I know. But for weed, we used to call it pass the dragon. But it was called traffic lights. I remember it being called that. I remember it being called puff puff pass or whatever. And
puff. Yeah, we're gonna play puff puff pass. Yeah, puff puff pass. Yeah, everyone get round in a circle. Yeah, puff puff pass. Yeah, some dirty hash zoot wrapped in like red Rizzlers and that.
And that was mainly spawned out of no one could afford to buy a draw for themselves. I'm talking, this is when we're 13, 14. So everyone chipped in for a 10 draw. Everyone would, like, you know, you'd roll one zoot and you'd have to share it between like five of you. Yeah, everyone's chipped in a couple of nuggets. And so that's why this came into, you know, this is one of the main reasons. So everyone gets high off the zoot, you know. You have to hold it in till it comes back round to you, you know what I mean? And then someone starts fucking around with the zoot and you're like,
have you ever had this? You might not remember it.
Yeah.
When that shit hash.
Yeah.
We called it pox.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes when you were like burning pox, either in a zoo, in one of them big white Rizzler zoots, yeah, with full of hash, the thickness of the smoke sometimes coming off the zoot, yeah, or even when you lit the pox a little bit before you could take it off and crumble it, even from just doing that, the thickness of the smoke coming off the rest of the hash when the little bit of the flame goes out. I used to remember thinking, like, what the fuck is this? Like, it would be thick, grey, like, cloudy, thick, luscious smoke. You'd be like, what? Like, fuck it.
But not nice. Yeah, exactly.
And even at like 17, 18, 19, I'm like, this is not like marijuana. No. Like, what the fuck are we smoking? But sometimes the thickness coming off someone's dirty, massive hash suit. Yeah. And they were like showing off, like a house party or something. Like, look how much hash I'm going to put in.
Yeah.
Of course, they put bare browns as well. And it's like they bill an L. Like the L, even if you're using thin fizzlers, the bit around the L is like thick as dick, you know what I mean?
Benson and Hedges or Marlboro
thingies. Straight, because if you had Marlboro Lights, you're getting slapped.
Yeah, pussy. Yeah, or what's it called? The silk cuff.
But you know, I'd allow you if you had Camel, man. If people had Camel, for some reason, it was like, all right, safe, yes.
safe on the Camel.
But the thickness of the. Can you ever remember anything like that? Pox was just. I wonder what. Finding all those bits of cling film inside the pox. Yes.
and you have to pick it out from inside. I remember finding bits of tire in there, bits of wood in there. I remember finding fucking like, yeah, traces.
What is box? Yeah. I'd love to know. But is it what you're saying just there? Yeah. Is it like the hash after the hash after the hash after they squeeze it through again, fizz it through again, squeeze it again until they're just it, like where people are standing making all that hash. They're like standing on bits of bark and shit. Yeah, all that goes into like the last bit. They just take it off the floor with all like these leaves. But I always thought, where does the plastic? If you were making hash and you were separating it with plastic, yeah, obviously you'd make like huge trays and then like have like a smooth like proper lid over the top. You would, there was like hash, like plastic bits like
inside, yeah,
in no sé qué, no sé cuándo, just where they want, you know what I mean, like whatever's going on in the hash.
Mate, it was disgusting.
Weird. Like, why was that fucking there?
We should do an episode because there's so much to talk about. Like that era in the mid to late 90s when we weren't spoilt for choice here. It was either shitty, chocolate weed, which was halfway decent if you get your hands on it, or pox. Remember, it was like, and then skunk started coming in, yeah? You know, people would go to
Amsterdam. The way you sold that was so, that's what it was, bro.
It was literally it was. All we had, yeah?
It was and then, choc weed.
Yeah, chocolate.
Pox.
Yeah, literally that was it. And then we'd go to Amsterdam and we'd be like, what the fuck don't we have that in London? We'd be like, it's only like an hour flight away or whatever. And we like, a different world when it came to weed, all the choices, all the different types and the hashes and the skunks and all this stuff. And then eventually it started coming here slowly, slowly. And then we started getting more choice. And I remember like when it came to hash, that was Red Seal, the squidgy black, some people would call it, but Red Seal or Gold Seal.
Gold Seal.
That was when I was like, ah, this pox we've been smoking is absolutely dirty filth. I was like, this is the puro, man. Like,
yeah, imagine how dog shit, like just basic Red Seal was back then. It was just basic, like, but it was so many levels above pox.
So many, man.
And I remember thinking that about, thinking something about Amsterdam, people bringing stuff back from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Back in the day. When they brought back like zoots of punk, there were people like, we were kids, we'd like bring back baggies with like, yeah, this one's like 0.4 grams of, you know what I mean, this thing. And this one's like White Widow, like 1 gram. I've got 1 gram of that, yeah. And then all like wrapped in a sock and brought back.
This is 00. They mix cocaine with the
widow. Yeah, yeah, all that shit. Yeah. And you're like, okay, we're going to all have a blaze. I brought it back for you, man. Rare. When the hash came out, you were always like, oh shit. There was like there was a noticeable difference between the punk, obviously.
Crazy.
But like, you know, punk was just like overly wormily crazy. But the hash, you were like, yo, they got like hash, which is like nice, mate. Like tasty, different hashish.
And me being an Arab, man, I prefer my hash, you know what I mean? And I used to go to Syria back in the day. My older cousins, they used to sneak off and bun zoots and I'd try and get in there with them, but they wouldn't allow me, man.
You know what are people like who love marijuana? All them people like, you never bun it with the browns.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't bun any marijuana with the browns anymore, but that's because I have that little fucking bong tin.
Yeah.
But what do people do who want to have hash?
Well, there's different...
What kind of... You have to have a zoo with browns in it.
Well, there's like, you know, different implements you can use, like bong type stuff where you can smoke that stuff. That's one way of doing it.
Just for the people who weren't born in the early 80s, having a browns is having a cigarette.
Yes.
A big you allow me a browns means please set me a cigarette so I can build my zoo.
Yes. And some people, there's tobacco alternatives. There's other stuff. Remember that stuff you used to buy in hippie heaven and other stuff that was like, you know, more organic or whatever.
Herbal
like
hype.
Yeah. Or there's pipes. I know hash is good in a pipe. And remember like hot knives as well. You'd make like this, like a... You'd
cut but that's not like you're 41 years old. You're going to get like the hot knives. Like I'm talking about like how do people smoke the hashish?
Yeah, I mean...
Has to be a pipe or something.
Or they'd get like the really blandest weed they can get and use that as tobacco and then put the fucking
maybe I could do that. Because that's what I used to do. I used to put like a little bit of punk in and then try and put just like a thin bit of hash in there.
But you lose like the boom thing about
exactly. Hash, and that's what I'm saying. Those kind of hashes have such incredible flavors and like depths. It's like fucking coffees. You know what I mean? Yeah. The array of like sick things are gone. Those kind of people aren't having the tobacco in their thing. I'm sure of it.
No, just they're probably thinking, smoking it in pipes. In pipes and shit, man. I mean, I guess. I mean, fuck
just
knows,
in
man.
Pipes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, God knows. And you see some people...
hash pipes.
You know, on Instagram, there are like people whose whole thing is about weed and different ways to roll the zoots.
You know how when they're taking their bong and there's like this new bong.
Yeah.
No, but
the
zoots... Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. That was...
They're always American.
And the types of zoots some people are rolling, like they'll fill it with like yeah. a fucking half ounce of weed. And the zoot is like a baseball bat. And then they'll like dip it in some like herb, like some weed fucking. Like,
yeah.
And then they'll get a long stringy bit of hash and then they'll wrap the hash around the zoot. And then they'll spark it. And I'm like, what are you? You want to die, man? That's you're going to overdose. I've never heard anyone overdose.
But do you remember back in the day when you said, oh, this is like Simon, yeah? Simon. You remember Simon?
Yeah. Don't say
dudes like that. So, yeah, this is Big S. Yeah, this is Simon.
Yeah.
No one blazes like him, bruv. Do you know what I mean? That was like a badge of honor for such a long time. No. You know your mate, like rare, who you think they blaze, yeah?
Them
lads don't know about anything about blazing.
I had a mate like that as well.
Yeah. Everyone had mates. I had a few. Yeah. I had bare mates like that. And they just said, no, don't talk to him. Like, you know, he buns way more than you. It was just like a thing, like an actual sentence. Bruv, he buns it down much harder than you. No, I bun it down way harder than him, bruv. We're like getting heated arguments about it.
And we used to grade each other on our rolling as well. Like any, you know, be like, yeah, what everyone would roll a boot and they'd be like, oh, that's a C grade. Oh, that's an A plus there. Oh, mate, we used to go crazy with it, man. And make bongs and all
sorts. Can't bun your zoots, bruv, because you're roaches, man. You're so thin and tiny, bruv. You're like a dickhead, mate.
We should do an episode, a weed episode, where we just chat about weed experiences and the history of weed in London and all that stuff. I would love to get into that. I'll do a bit of research. Maybe you guys listening, whether you smoke weed or not, like if you have any questions you want to send us in a voice note to the email or the Instagram. All the links are below. Send us in questions. If we want to do a weed episode, you can ask us questions about graph or ask us questions about life and love and relationships.
We're going to help you out.
Anything
you want. Clearly qualified enough to help you out.
Fuck, I should have a question ready from someone, man. Shit.
But that's a good idea, Amps. And then you could have, what's like the maddest mission you've done to go and get a draw? Do you know what I mean? I've had so many of those, so many things like that. Where you're on some mad, ridiculous thing. And what the? If you was older, you'd be thinking, what the fuck are you doing, son?
Isn't it, man?
To go and get a cue for the man then.
All right, thing.
What, Ambrosia?
Let's go into a question, a listener's question. Then we'll go into, and then I got something to chat about. All right, let's go. Check it out.
Yo, Mr. Ambrosia and Mr. Themos.
Salute.
Here's a question for you. What is your favorite trackside reach? And what's your first memory of it? Is it the Funky Five? Is it Turnham Green Tunnel? Is it the East Acton Bridge? Is it the White City Pit? Hit us with it, yo.
We've kind of answered this question, I think, on the pod.
I don't know. What did he say? The sickest trackside?
Just your first favorite trackside. The first one that you got into. And obviously, I'm going to say the train on my way to school. The Eleanor Wilkinson Wall. Had Diet, Asia, Praise, Mean, Heist. Who else was on that wall? Fucking Bear People back then. I know Fume had a thing on there.
Is that your favorite reach? Was it?
No,
it was. The question was your favorite reach.
No, like your first favorite. Let's listen to it again. But I'm pretty sure he said your first favorite trackside.
Yo, Mr. Ambrosia and Mr. Themos. Here's a question for you. What is your favorite trackside reach?
What's your first
memory of it? Is it the Funky Five? Is it Turnham Green Tunnel?
What's your favorite trackside and what's your first memory of
man's,
it?
Man's asking what the favorite trackside
is. I'm going to say that one. The fucking...
Funky Five Ting.
Not Funky Five. The Eleanor Wilkinson Wall. There's a girls' school called Eleanor Wilkinson. The District Line and the Piccadilly Line went past there. It was the first trackside mission that I did with Frez. Another story I've told on the pod, because my Arabic...
Has that still got graph there on the back and it's fenced off?
Still got graph. on the wall, but they've put a fence now, a metal three-prong
on the
metal
wall.
Fence on yeah. top of the wall now. So you, no one can paint on it. It's still got a frieze on there, but everything else, it's all bushes and overgrown now, so it's not really a reach. I know Asma and a couple other heads have got stuff on the other side. There's a little box there. But on that side,
it's not
a
reach anymore. It's not a reach. Nah, but frizz has still got something there.
There's a yellow frizz. You can just see it between the vines. Like if you on the winter when there's no leaves on it, you can see it. Yeah.
Because I did used to like that reach, but it's not like it's not the best reach.
It's not the best, but it's an early one of mine, and it was a favorite. I used to go past it every day. There were some nice bits on there.
Do you remember the Baron's Court, West Ken?
The ledge.
Ledge.
Oh, man.
Back in the day.
That was...
And not back in the day, like in the late 90s.
Yeah.
When it was... Man, some of the names on there, bro.
That oh, that had everyone.
And it was so long.
And I always wanted to do it. I got so mad when you did it without me, man. You and Diet did it. And I was like, fuck, man. Yeah. But I've always
wanted but to we do didn't. It. Yeah, that's like... That's not quite there.
That's part of it.
But, bruv, the names up on that, there was, like, Sari.
Yeah.
Who else am I thinking? All the usual suspects. Remember, like, bare heads.
Yeah.
And it got all the usual suspects, but then, like, extras.
And I remember when it was first getting done, like, there was the first few names, and then immediately after, a couple names would come on, then another, because like you said, it was so long, it took a while to fill up. And then eventually it got filled up, you know what I mean? And yeah. And it's like quite, how wide is the ledge to stand on? Is it a meter or less than a meter?
No, it's less than that.
Right. Okay.
You can lie on, if I lay on it, it's like that's how, from shoulder to shoulder.
I mean, it's not a humongous drop. I reckon you'd survive that drop, but you'd hurt yourself falling off there, man. It was at least one, like, you know, a first story building high. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe you can't fall off that drop.
No, you don't want to. I know you'd hurt yourself, but I'm saying you wouldn't die.
It's just the tracks at the bottom. There's no like leeway. You'd fucking lucky if you don't electrocute yourself.
That's true as well. Yeah,
that's the like the district runs. You seen that photo I've got?
Yeah,
of me and Dyer. Like, yeah. Because we have to lie down and it's going past like that.
Yeah, you can see the top of the train is literally
and I just go like that
at your height. Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking, that's because we're lying down. But that's how, I mean, no, I'm talking about the closeness of it.
Yeah.
It's like half a foot away. And then there's the pick. And then, but the pick always stops there. There's like a red light for the Piccadilly just there.
Yeah, man. Jokes. So, okay, so Baron Court's ledge. That's a good one as well. But all the ones.
That's a sick reach, yeah. But you see what the reach he mentioned as well, the Turnham Green reach.
Yeah.
I never did that reach back in the day, but that reach, there was a Vizzo there. Bro, yeah. that reach was sick. Yeah. Sick reach. I think there was a big nerve there. But there was obviously lots of people there over the years.
We did it in the late 90s. I remember we got on there from the Turnham Green Park, climbed over the fence, got up the little hill thing. I don't think it's like that anymore. I don't know if you can get up there the same way. But
there's
we did
two big fences.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Before it was just a little fence and we did it and you're fully exposed to Turnham Green. You know what I mean? They just, because you're up on a hill bit on the side, but if you do it at night, then you're relatively hidden away. Because yeah,
I didn't clock.
Because the thing is, there's the district line runs on either side and then the wall is holding up where the Piccadilly line runs. You know what I mean? And so, isn't it like that? Yeah. Or is it the other way around? No, it is that way. And then there's a tunnel that links the two district lines. That's where you got a dub on there and a couple other heads. That's slightly hidden away. But then we painted the wall a bit further down towards the station, like, you know, coming up to that bit.
Oh, yeah, and yeah, then, yeah, yeah.
And I think there's trees.
Wasn't there
now
an Asia on there at one time?
Yeah.
And then they've got a bit further down as well. If you do them tracks, you get to that hut as well.
Yeah.
Debug and stay. Who else has got a piece on there? Tents. T-Bug stay in tents. I've got sick, sick pieces on there.
Salute them lot,
you
can
see it when you come out. Oh, man, they're sick. I'm going to try and get a photo of that for the pod.
Dope.
I've been there for a while now as well. It's nice to see pieces like that there.
Yeah.
But that bit there, you see how we're talking about it now? That bit there has always been sick, bruv. But for me, coming down the stairs at Gunnersbury Station, You know the stairs at Gunnersbury?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, as you're getting to the platform, the rails are there. And there was always, there was like a devised piece there. Mm. It was sick, sick. I got a theme piece. I did a theme piece there and I can't believe it. I never thought of it. Like it was, I took photos of it. I just gutted. And at the bottom of Gunnersbury Station was there was always like a Vizzo and an Akey and a Pause and a, and then all them lot were all, they did Obey, Omen, Kin,
Kin,
their spot.
Yeah,
you know, Vega,
because that was Clock. The train, because they were all from that Southwest Richmond Q.
Yeah, them were like battering, but they battered everywhere, but they were like from Richmond and around them sides. Like,
so that was the Richmond line from Turner Green.
That school that enough of them went to the same school.
Yeah,
like loads of them.
I know. A lot of them went to Richmond College, but a lot of them went.
I was going to go.
Ah, fuck! What's it called? My mates all went there. Fucking Riddler went there as well. MC Riddler. Grey Court School was the name of the school. I think it was in Ham or in Sheen or some shit like that. Yeah, Grey Court. I had some friends that went there. but yeah, a lot.
I was trying to do that reach so many times. Yeah, and now I've got there's an easy get on for that.
What Gunnersbury?
Big up Ackett and big up Diet.
Yeah,
that reach around Turnham Green there.
Uh huh. Oh yeah. But yeah.
One time, yeah, I got on at fucking Gunnersbury Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
When I was first getting back into Greff, I was taking it way too over seriously, yeah, to do like a track site. Way too much, like laughingly too much. Like the day before, I had all this like ladder set up behind their hut. They were like gambling, they wouldn't see it. So I don't have to move it, don't have to make any noise. I can just nip in there, go up the ladder, and I'm over the fence. That fence there is like fucking, 8 foot, 9 foot? Like, there's no point in doing these things at all. Plus, it's miles away when you're actually going on foot. Yeah, miles away.
Crazy, yeah.
And trains are still running, but I'm desperate to do that. Do you know what I wasn't? I was, what that reach doesn't exist. There's another reach I'm desperate to do around that area. But I've got on that place there. And I walk towards and then get to that place where opposite Zelo's.
Yeah.
But like before that, before like the supermarket and before that, like there's a, like the rental van and shit. And I'm like, right, I could have just got on. I'm a dick. Yeah. And I have to run through that bit of tunnel.
Huh.
And I've never been in that tunnel. I can't remember. I haven't been on that bit of the line for ages. Cause that's like from Kew Gardens to like Gunnersbury or something. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm like, right, how long is this tunnel? How am I going to do it? This is like 4 years ago. Yeah. It's not like very long time ago. Completely on my J's with kids. And I'm like, I've got to do that fucking reach. And pelt it through that fucking tunnel. And the train doesn't come, but it does come soon after. I've got nowhere to duck because I've gone past like that bit where like the rent vans is and shit. I'm just on the fucking track.
Mm.
The Piccadilly's still running on the top. And then there's like, I can hear noise. And I've just got to that bit where that building on the left where like pies and like sit. Like, I think this would be like a ganja on there or a gun on there. It's one stage back in the day.
Yeah.
That building there was sick. And a Vega and people like that had pieces on the glass now where like Arwell's got a piece and other people up there got a piece, Kiff's.
Yeah.
And that's a sick read. I had to jump in there and the train's like, and I'm just lying in these nettles and like, there's this fox fucking like looking at me where and I'm thinking, rah, what's going on? I'm waiting for the train to go by. And I look up where because the Piccadilly's a bit higher on like, that mound, just like a mound of shit, but it's just got tracks and it goes higher.
Yeah,
and I look at it and they're just bare clays just working there. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, I've come out the longest way of all time to get to that reach like a dick.
It's bare
clays. Like a toy amateur, like just getting back. I've got to like do some crap. And then got there, can't do it. And I got this one reach. It's going to be there forever. But this one reach on like the wrong side where the train's like up here. You know, you're never going to see it. Oh, there, right. At least I got that reach. You know what I mean? That's where I fell in the bush.
You did something.
I'm in this fucking bush, and that fucking cut. There's a fat cat silver.
Yeah.
And then I went back. And I went back the same way, went back through the tunnel, dust, shit in my pants, like scolding myself in my head, like, what the fuck are you doing?
Man. Yo, listen.
And when I did that reach, I just hopped on straight and on near it and just walked up and did it. Fucking beaut, though. Fuck.
Yeah, man. All right, cool. Listen, guys, thank you for that. Sorry, because time is running out. I don't want to go too much over an hour. Man.
Theme's going overboard on the reaches.
No, that's all.
Shut up, Theme.
Thank you for that question, man. Keep sending them questions in. All right.
We haven't answered the question. I don't know what.
Yeah, you said Boston Manor Ledge, and I said the Eleanor
Wilson. Boston Manor Ledge.
Or whatever it's fucking called.
Boston Manor.
Not Boston Manor. What was it called?
Let's call it Boston Manor Ledge.
No, what was it called again? Because of the theme, you know? Baron's Court Ledge. There we go. Baron's Court. All right.
Baron's Court West Kent.
Yeah.
Ledge.
We knew it as the Baron's Court Ledge, man. But yo, big up for that, man. Let's get into your tune, and then I want to chat about a little something, and then hopefully we'll get a quick critique in there.
This guy.
Yeah.
We were talking. Well, we were having a podcast. We were doing something. We were doing Big Up Daz. I think it was Daz's podcast. No, it wasn't fucking Daz. Big Up Daz, but it was someone. And I mentioned, I was with you, and I mentioned this geezer. And like, it's trap. It was trappy. It's one of the questions, like, who are you not feeling? And I said about music. I said trappy. This geezer.
Okay, yeah. What's his name? Parcelo. I thought it was French. When you sent it to me, I thought, it was French hip-hop. But then I gave it a quick.
He was born in the UK, yeah?
Uh-huh.
But before he was one, his Ghanaian parents sent him back to Ghana.
Okay.
Well, not back because he's never been, but they said, you're going Ghana.
Yeah.
So, and he lived there with his gran.
Okay.
And then he came back, I think he was like 8, 9 years old. So he's like, you know, fully learned the rhythm. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can tell in his music, like, I like this guy's music, bruv. I like his style. I like his, like, he's completely individual. He's like, I'm fucking feeling it.
It's dope. This track's called Belly. It's got.
But then he went to jail. He went to fucking jail in England,
right?
In December 2022.
Oh shit! Okay, recent.
And then this tune, Belly, he released it on his Instagram, and there was like, oh shit, he's posted this tune. He's come out. He's out of jail or whatever. Played this, and I was like, yo, I like the vibe, bruv. Like the video.
And what's that music that comes out of Ghana with the dance and they all do the mad dancing to it? I can't remember what it's fucking called, but it's fucking beautiful and it's amazing.
I'm
going to look it up while we listen to it. All right, this is Parcelo, a track called
Parcelo
Belly. Let's go.
Badman.
I've been gone for a while, but I still make it back to you. I'm in the back roads with my killers, girl, you know what we have to do. I know you might think it's a part, but baby, I'm Parcelo. In the elevator, in the shard, I know you feeling my point of view. Ghetto man can still travel. Ghetto one can have accountant. And ghetto man can leave the bando and still stack money in abundance. Ghetto man, nobody struggle. Fuck that. Ghetto man can go Mayfair. Ghetto man can still be humble. Hella ghetto ones in my circle. Right from my ghetto man, kill you with no license.
Never had much, now we have many. And we pop handy, we now have you touch penny. Go nice, so we're selling from our city. Oh Lord, we don't stop to the money he's spending. Never had much, now we have many. And we pop handy, we now have you touch penny. Go nice, so we're selling from our city. Oh Lord,
I like it, man, I like it.
Belly, belly, hit the belly.
Hit the belly.
Belly, belly, beat the belly. Get a man must feed the belly. Get a man must feed family. Belly, belly, hit the belly. Belly, belly, feed the belly. Get a man must feed the belly. Get a man must feed family. Stubborn to the bone, see me walk with chest. Feel that slack, that's the style and flex. True when the money came, fool them vex. Big up the great ones who just mind business. I never tired, except kill them next. Compete with myself and I did best. Hit the belly, do you know how it feels so blessed? You know feel the power when you self-invest.
Never had much, now we have many. And we pop penny, me now have you touch penny. Go nice, I was selling from a silly old lad. We don't stop to the money is spending. Never had much, now we have many. And we pop penny, me now have you touch penny. Go nice,
hit the belly.
Hit the belly. Wow, it's a sick tune, man, I have to say. Respect to Pascal.
I love people like that. I love people that don't give a shit and just do like their music like that. I fucking, you can tell he's got a different rhythm, different style, different pattern. Like, I love that shit.
It's dope, man. It's good shit, man. Really like that. I'm going to get into some of his stuff. I'm going to check it out. But what I wanted to bring up today was the other day I went to a book launch. And it was this book here by a guy called Ben McIntyre. It's a book called The Siege. The reason why I want to talk about this and the reason why I was at the launch of this book is because my dad had some involvement. My dad was a hostage at the Iranian embassy siege in 1980. Six gunmen took over the Iranian embassy here in High Street, in Kensington, the embassy. They took it over for 6 days and then the SAS got called out. This was the before anyone knew what the SAS even was. You know what I mean? It was a thing for a while, but then this was they got pulled out on British soil. You know what I mean? On live TV. Again, it was so many firsts with this thing. It was broadcast live on TV, the whole thing, which was strange for the time because of the technology had got to that point then. And yeah, my dad happened to be there because he was a journalist. He was just there to interview the ambassador, the Iranian ambassador at the time. And so he just turned up that day and boom, he got swept up into a fucking hostage situation.
That is mad.
It's absolutely mental.
Going to work there as like as a contractor for on a day thing,
just for one just day,
a day's thing.
And the fucked up thing is, my dad was trying to find a parking space, so he was 10 minutes late to his meeting. Yeah, because he couldn't find a parking space, and then he got there, and then five. If he was an extra 10 minutes late, he would have missed the whole thing. Like it was that nuts. Yeah, basically, Ben McIntyre, this guy, a historian, and he'd done a couple of books about the SAS where he got. He got intel from the SAS because they're a highly secretive organization. But because
I just want to say because you're sounding like people like in the SAS might watch this, bro. The SAS was like around way before this raid, way before.
Yeah,
and like the roots of it go back to this like Second World War and shit.
Yeah, but it was relatively secretive. You know what I mean? They weren't like this was when this incident happened. Fine. That's when most people found out that the SAS exists. You know what I mean? They were around for before. You're right. But this guy Ben McIntyre, he did a few books about the SAS, so he has mad links with them. And this book, because my dad before he passed away. About 4 years ago now, he was writing a book about his experience in the Iranian embassy. He was writing a big book. He was spending many years writing it, but then obviously he passed away before he could really finish it. So Ben asked for that book because the thing is about this incident, most documentaries, most movies, most books about it, which there's been hundreds and hundreds of them about it, they mainly focus on the SAS part because that's the exciting part. And it was ultimately looked at as a success. They were successful in their mission. So a lot of people focus on the SAS bit, but it's so deep. Like the political intrigue, the dynamic between the hostages and the gunmen, and you know, through 5 days in there at that moment in time, and all, like I said, the politics behind it and all the stuff that was happening was pretty deep, man. And my dad's book.
Who was the Prime Minister? Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher was literally only a year into her premiership at the time, and this incident. The way she was kind of praised for her handling of it kind of set the mood for the rest of her leadership. And then onwards into this whole war on terror that we live with, 9/11, all these things like, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorism and all that stuff. Like this all kind of spawned from that incident. Obviously, several incidences, but this was definitely one of the major ones because it was so heavily broadcast, and it was like at one point the whole world was watching. You know, on the sixth day when the SAS finally came in.
That is so mad that your dad,
it's nuts,
was just going there,
yeah,
for work,
just to interview.
He wasn't there the day before. He's just going there that day,
just there, just to see him that morning, just to go see
and the place gets. Overrun by hostages,
and there was another.
Who was it who did that?
So my dad was there to, he was just waiting in the lobby to interview the ambassador, waiting. There was two other British guys there, Sim Harris and another guy, I can't remember his name. They worked for the BBC. They were trying to get visas to go to Iran because they were about to go to Iran for some reason to film or whatever.
Yeah, but who stormed it?
I'm going to tell you. And then there was Trevor Locke, who was a policeman who was on duty at the embassy. And then the rest of the people were Iranians, yeah? Now, at like fucking 9 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it was, six gunmen, they were from Iran, but the south of Iran, there was a place called Arabistan or Kazakhstan or something, but it's mainly called Arabistan. And it's the oil-rich part of Iran. And just not too long before, the Ayatollah Khomeini took over Iran. Yeah, there was a big coup and he kicked out the main leader and he took over. And he was a very Islamic fundamentalist kind of dude, yeah. But he took over the country. And the people living in Arabistan, which is part of Iran, they wanted their independence. And they thought, the Ayatollah Khomeini will help us do this. But it was the opposite. The Ayatollah Khomeini actually clamped down on them even more. So Saddam, who was beefing with the Ayatollah Khomeini and all that, he was sending people into Arabistan, finding all the fanatics there, the young guys who were like against the Ayatollah Khomeini, and told them, yo, we'll train you and we'll send you on missions to whatever, to find independence or whatever. So Saddam Hussein was behind it. He got six young men. They were like 22, 24. I think the oldest gunman was 25, 26 years old. And he trained them, sent them to London, armed them. They had Kalashnikovs. They had six grenades, Russian grenades, mainly Russian arms, a couple of handguns, a couple of machine guns, and a couple of grenades, basically. And then
really?
Yeah.
They had all of that.
They had all of that. And so they basically, the plan, like this is my, so when they took over the embassy, they came in, they licked off bare shots, they grabbed up Trevor Locke, the policeman who was there. And then Trevor Locke had on his lapel a little button, like emergency button, and he managed to press it. So he alerted the authorities, but that's all he could do. Then they grabbed him up and, you know, tied him up and stuff. And Trevor Locke had a gun in his holster that I read somewhere. They never found it. The terrorist, the gunman, they never found it. So he had it on him the whole fucking time, man. So just think of that, like, you know, trying to work out.
He decided not to use it because he'd probably get murked.
He'll get murked and other people will get murked. You know what I mean? Like, it was a mad game. But then it came to use right at the end as well, yeah? And so they put all the non-Iranians in one room, which was my dad, the two BBC guys, Trevor Locke, and a couple of people who worked in the embassy who weren't Iranian. And then the rest of the hostages, I think there were 26 hostages in total, and they had about 6-7 in this room and about 20 Iranians who were under threat in the other room. And their demands were, and the reason why they chose Britain instead of like America or some other Western countries, because they thought Britain would empathize with their plight because Britain were against the Ayatollah Khomeini. Yeah, this is how naive and dumb these kids were and how brainwashed they were. They were actually told by Saddam and all them lot that if you do this mission, you'll survive it. You know, don't worry, the Brits are pushover. The Brits are easy to deal with. That, you know, they've, and also the free.
So he flew them over to England from where? Iran?
From Iraq. Yeah.
And they were unarmed. And then he's got the Russians through Putin.
No, well, probably. Yeah, I'm sure Putin, maybe not Putin, whoever.
What was his name?
Gorbachev?
With the
birthmark on his head. Remember that guy? And no, but it was actually.
But no, they've armed them in England.
But yeah, but they might not have got it through the Russians in England. Like they would have got they would have bought the arms from Russia, but the Russians wouldn't have.
I'm just trying to think, like, the size of the operation is pretty decent.
Yeah.
Because you're flying these kids over, brainwashing them, but then you've got to arm them in England.
Look, and there's so many new pictures that I haven't seen in this book. There's a couple of my dad from the SAS
reconnaissance, because when they found out my dad, obviously they find out who all the people in the building are, and then they do research on them. And obviously my dad used to work for the PLO, and he used to, so he was on their records. And so loads of new information has come out since, you know how gradually they release bits of information and stuff. So now most of the information is out, and Ben McIntyre's got access to all of them. At the launch of this book, I met Hector, this guy Hector. He was the head of the SAS at the time. He's like an old man now and a fucking walking stick, but I got to shake his hand and say save to him. A couple of SAS members who were actually involved were there as well. And obviously Sim Harris was there, and his daughters and his wife, and my mum was there, my brother, and everyone. We was all there. It was cool to experience. And they've basically my dad has always kind of been heralded as the unsung hero of the whole incident, because he was not under threat from the gunman, because he was Syrian, he's not Iranian, and he was a journalist, so he had connects to journalists and stuff and to the outside world to broadcast the message from the gunman, get their message out there if that's what they wanted. And also he spoke fluent Arabic and fluent English, so he was basically translating. And Sim Harris has said many times that if my dad hadn't been there, then tensions could have got a lot higher. You know what I mean? And the gunman would have been a lot more.
Obviously, they would have. They would.
Exactly. And so
he's translating into English.
Yeah. And so my dad's
a massive asset.
He's out of the window trying to negotiate with a gun in the back of his head, trying to chat to the police outside.
Who?
My dad. And Sim
really?
Harris. Yeah. What I mean? And he's on the phone. My dad's on the phone to Margaret Thatcher. Like with a gun to his head again, trying to fucking
chatting to Marge.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
He's not.
Yeah,
he's chatting to Marge.
To everyone,
he's heard her accent,
and it's just.
I love her.
And so these kids were so naive. These gunmen, they were literally, like I said, 21. I think the youngest one was like 19, 20, and the oldest one was like 25, 26. Yeah, something like that. And so they were young, naive. Their plan was to overtake the embassy. Their plan. Their demands were the release of 91 political prisoners in the jail in Iran. They wanted the Ayatollah Khomeini to release these prisoners. So that was their demands. Yeah, it was never going to fucking happen. Saddam Hussein knew it was never going to happen. My dad knew instantly that was never going to. Everyone knew it was never going to happen, and except for these things coming. And no one wanted to tell him, because they were like, they didn't want to fuck with it. They thought they were going to get their demands met. They'd go to the airport, get in a flight back, with the hostages, and then release the hostages once they arrived to their destination, to Iraq or whatever.
They thought they were going to kidnap everyone and move them to the airport.
That was the plan.
And walk through the airport, walk through customs, obviously with guns pointed. Yeah. Get to the captain's going to be ready, waiting for them, through no radio whatsoever. They're just going to bowl over there, just do it. And fly back to where? And then Iraq, when we get back to Iraq.
Yeah.
And then say, right, yeah, we're cool, get off. Everyone gets off, and just whoever was in that building is phoning their missus.
They thought,
I'm in Iraq.
They were that naive. They thought they were going to be able to get away with it, man. And just think the stress. He's told me so many times, and like I've mentioned, we've had every year since that incident, we've had reunions every year. All the hostages that were involved that didn't die got to get together, and gradually more people would get involved. When the SAS finally revealed themselves, we had SAS members come to my house and we'd have dinner with them and they'd tell their side.
Is this the 80s it happened?
It happened in 1980, exactly. My mum was pregnant with me at the time. So this is 45.
At the very beginning of the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. And so man, it's just been a mad thing. It's been a big part of my life, And my dad's life, obviously, talking about it. He's been on many documentaries.
Was translating out the window with a gun to the back of his head.
Yeah, imagine.
From some, I've been trained for 6 weeks, 22-year-old guy.
Yeah. My dad said said they would sit in a room, and one of the guys, one of the more mental dudes who was in there, he said the leader guy had his head screwed on, and he actually
he could reason with this guy, but there was one of the gunmen, he would sit there with a grenade and the pin of the grenade and just twirl the grenade like that round in his, like on the pin, with the pin. And my dad would just be looking at this guy going, what the fuck is going on, man? You know what I mean? Like, it's such a nuts experience for him. But then they kind of, you know how it is, you know, what do they call it? Stockholm syndrome, to a certain degree. And also there's another syndrome, it's called Lima syndrome, where the gunmen start empathizing with the hostages. And then the hostages, you know, they're in this room for like 5 days and they're trying to like, you know, get this thing finished, you know what I'm saying, and over with. It was only supposed to last a couple of days or whatever they thought it was going to be. Yeah? My dad knew the police are, like, someone's gonna break in and it's gonna end in fucking blood. My dad knew this was gonna happen. My dad's main concern was that they'd think he was a gunman and shoot him. That was his main concern. He wasn't as concerned about the gunman shooting him because he wasn't Iranian, you know what I mean? They were only threatening the Iranian.
But he's like, from this moment on, I'm not saying yellow. That's it. I'm saying, let's go.
There's all these crazy things, like the SAS took over both the buildings on both sides of the main embassy, and they were drilling holes in the wall, and the terrorists could hear like squeaking, going, "Hey, can you hear that?" And then Sim Harris and my dad were going, "No, it's just mice. It's just mice." They knew some shit was happening, and then they were like, "No, it's just
was that the blag? It's just mice."
Yeah, and then in the end, I think they called into Heathrow. And
was that really the blag?
Check this out. And then they
what's going on? What's going on? No, it's just mice. I've been here for years. Mice, yeah. It's just mice. I know they're mice.
Well, they had to say something, and then they got the planes to fly lower over the embassy. All the chartered flights that were flying, they called Heathrow and they said, fly the planes extra low so they'd be extra loud so that they wouldn't hear the drilling so they could stick their microphones in. It was a crazy whole thing. And it's all like, it's the most intensely documented version of what happened in those things. And he got resources from the SAS, from my dad, from Sim Harris, from everyone who was involved in the siege. Yeah. And it's also, he told us on the, because we were in the after party for the book launch or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. It wasn't after party. It was a couple of hors d'oeuvres and wine and we were chilling with Ben and everyone.
That's a very book launch.
Kind, yes, of after party. And he told us it's been picked up by a TV production company. They're going to make a 6-part series. I don't know on what platform yet, if it's going to be Netflix or
I was going to say, surely this has been on TV already.
Well, they've made documentaries. They've made a film with that guy, that British actor with the bald head. I can't fucking remember his name.
Recently?
No, it came out, I think, in 2015, 2014.
Like Jason, whatever his name is.
No, not Jason Statham, but one of them type of guys, man. I never actually watched it. It was really shit.
The British Bruce Willis.
Yeah, my dad and my brother watched it. They said it was complete bullshit, Hollywood bullshit. You know what I mean? And it was just, you know. And even the character who played my dad.
American in the movie, Navy SEALs came in.
They even changed the name of the person playing. Instead of Karkuti, they called him Karkuri. Yeah, they changed the T to an R. I think so they wouldn't have to get my dad's permission to use his likeness or some shit. They just used complete liberties. It's got nothing to, it wasn't based in truth at all. Yeah. So all the attempts of making a dramatized version of this, they just never had the right amount of intel about what happened, or they just tried to glorify the whole SAS part of it. You know what I mean? There's been a
I knew it happened, but I didn't realize your pops had spoken to Margaret Thatcher on the blower.
He was,
hello, Gil.
He was the main dude.
While you're at it, stop the old poll tax. Starts getting involved. Look, could have been head of state.
Here's a picture of my dad and Margaret Thatcher afterwards, man. And anyway, like,
sick, yeah. Sick.
I don't want to get too mad deep into it, man. But
he was a negotiator.
He was thrust in a position where he had to do something, man.
So he started negotiating.
Yeah, he just had to. He had to do what he had to do.
That's that's like profoundly involved.
He's a super G, man. To have that's dealt a super with that. G.
I bet he did it mad calm as well.
I mean, man, he got mad like ulcers and shit from it, from the stress. Like, the dude, he suffered for it and I couldn't play with any guns when I was a kid growing up. I couldn't really watch movies with guns in the house. Obviously I did when I was outside of the house at my mates and at Frez's house or whatever, but in my house he would never let me have toy guns. All this shit affected him quite profoundly, man. You know what I mean?
In the background there is always this little Ali with his hand grenade in his hand, or with the grenade in his hand. Often would come, even if it wasn't his shift, he'll just storm into the middle of the building and look with quite big open eyes in the faces of the Iranian hostages, inviting them for trouble, you know. So that was pretty scary. I mean, whenever he showed up, just his mere physical appearance was enough to send fear into our spine, tell the truth. But he just wanted to kill somebody. I mean, you know, it was pretty obvious.
Really?
Yeah. And on all the documentaries where they interview my dad about it, he, on most of them, he cries when it comes to the bit. Because on the fifth day, my dad fell terribly ill. Man, he got crazy cramp. Like I said, he developed these ulcers in his stomach through stress, and he desperately wanted to stay in there because he knew if he left, it would all go to shit. But also, he didn't want to stay in there, obviously, as well. Yeah,
because he needs to get out and get medical attention.
But he fell extremely sick on the fifth day. He was all pale, sweating. He was curled up on a ball. He couldn't stand up. So the terrorists, because they'd been with him now for 5 days and he'd helped them out so much, and, you know what I mean, like, made the situation a bit better for them, if you want to call it that, they let him go on the fifth day. And so he was the last bit of intel. So obviously immediately when he left there, he went straight to hospital, and all the SAS intel guys, like, harangued my dad about all the last minute details, who's got what weapon, which rooms are they in, what, you know what I mean, because they were about to jump in there, because they just killed one of the hostages. They took him and exterminated him. No, what's the word when you just kill someone straight?
Tapped him.
No, not assassinate, but there's a word where you just kill someone. Yeah, they killed one of the hostages. And Thatcher said from the beginning, she said, they can maneuver with one. If only one hostage dies, they can still negotiate. If two hostages die, that's it. There's no negotiating. We're going in and fucking them up. So they killed that first guy and they dumped his body out the front and they carried him off. This guy called Levasani.
They just killed some first guy. No,
because on the fifth day, this is when just before my dad fell ill.
So they let your dad out?
No, before. They let my dad out and then they went in and they went into the Iranian room. There was one guy, one of the hostages in the Iranian part. His name was Levasani. He was working for the Ayatollah Khomeini. He was in the embassy, but he was a very loyal follower of Ayatollah Khomeini. So he was constantly arguing with the gunmen, shouting at them, chatting shit. My dad would always, he would slap him around the face. My dad would be like, shut the fuck up. Don't chat to them like that. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to kill us, man, if you keep acting like that. And he was like, I want to be martyred. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, he was one of them type of dudes. And my dad was just like, shut the fuck up, bro. And literally, my dad slapped him around the face and had to pin him.
Around the chops, bro.
At one point, he found a pen and he wrote on the wall, like, pro Ayatollah Khomeini slogans in this wall. And then the gunmen saw it and they were going to beat him up. And then my dad intervened, stopped them from doing it, and that's when my dad slapped him and said, stop fucking around, you're gonna get us all.
That's when your dad should have just said, yeah, lads,
yeah, you know what,
lads, give him a fucking kicking because he's fucking it up for all of us.
Well, in the end, after my dad went out, they went in, took that guy, took him down into the basement,
they capped him,
and then they said, we're gonna kill hostage every half an hour until you meet our demands. What we're doing is 6 days now, man. What the fuck? You know what I mean? And then, they're actually fuming. And my dad's not there, and everyone's just stress level just went up by
through the roof.
And then they said, okay, we're gonna kill a hostage every half an hour, and then they pretended to kill a hostage. They just licked off some shots. They said, look, we're going to kill one now. And then they went, bah, 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 but they didn't actually shoot one. But on the outside, they thought, oh, shit, they killed another person. Time for the SAS. They called the SAS. And they were just sitting there, just drooling to get in there. You know, I mean, the SAS, they've been training their whole life.
These 23-year-old kids from Iraq who've been given like a 6-week camp with Saddam's mates. Yeah. It's so good.
And these dudes, the SAS, are just outside, just waiting to go.
And they know what weapon. Your dad's given them
everything. Yeah, told
them everything. Way more information than they usually have.
Mm. And they built, like, you know, they'd gone deep in, like, it's all in this book. It's crazy.
That's like, see you later.
What they
that is a through. That's a proper see you later.
And it was all on live TV. Also, as well, I should mention,
any SAS injured?
Yeah, one of them got because they were rappelled down from the ceiling, from the roof, and some came in from the bottom. And one of the guys rappelling down, his rappel got hooked. And he couldn't get untied. And they had these frame bombs where they put them on top of the frame of the window. And then they blew out the windows, you know. And this guy was still hanging there. And I think he like burnt. He got third degree burns on his leg or something. But other than that, I think everyone survived. But then all the when they took it over, all the gunmen threw their guns out of the window and then pretended they were hostages. And so then when the SAS were like, so they took out a couple of the government, they took out a couple of the tests, but then they pulled, then they kicked all the hostages out of the building, but then they arrested all the hostages and tied them all up. All the hostages got handcuffed. Yeah. And then all the hostages were like, they're the terrorists. That's the terrorist. That's one of the, and then they all pointed at all the gunmen, and then they grabbed the gunmen, dragged them back into the building and killed them because their job was to kill the gunman. There wasn't rescue the hostages and you know, arrest the gunman. No, they were like, kill the gunman and yeah, save the hostages. So they took him back in and killed him, except for one guy, the main leader guy. He survived. They took him to trial, took him into prison, and he came out of prison. He spent 30 something years in prison. Now he's out of prison, living in England somewhere.
Is he?
Yeah. he sent my dad a letter.
Really?
Yeah. He sent
what kind of thing did it say? What kind of
apologizing, saying I'm sorry, really? I put you through that. That's fucked up. You know what I mean? I was naive, I was a kid, you know what I mean? I didn't know what was going on. Like it was a mad, obviously my dad didn't reply, he didn't want nothing to do with him, you know what I mean? But we got a fucking letter, man. I think he's an Uber driver in Birmingham. That's what I heard. But I mean, fuck knows, man. He's under, you know. I swear, you might be. So if you're living in Birmingham, you catch an Uber, you might be with that guy.
I was trying not to laugh, but you can't say that. You can't say it like that.
He spent like over 35, you know, whatever years in prison and shit. But yeah, that's just crazy. Yo, we went well over an hour, man. We don't want
to. We're big up to Mustafa, man.
Fuck Graph Critique, man. But yeah,
that was a sensational story.
Just last bit. Ben McIntyre is actually going to be on the Alexi Sale podcast. He's already recorded the episode, so it should be coming out in the next couple of weeks, which my brother produces and he co-hosts with Alexi Sale, legendary British comedian. So so that will be a sick episode to check out. So it's not dropped yet, but it will come out in a couple of weeks. So go check out the Alexi Sale podcast. Go buy this book. It's on Amazon. You can buy it, or you can buy it from any good bookshop. It's like about 12 quid or something. So if you're interested and you want to check it out, go check that book out. All right.
It is a very good story.
Shout out my pups, Mustafa Karkuti, legendary dude. Yeah, nuts, man. But yo, listen, peace, party people. We've been gone way over an hour. Salute my brother Theme. We're going to go out to this classic 90s hip hop track by OC.
Thanks to all the people that said the intro tune to the last episode was sick.
Salute. That is a sick.
That was very good of you to say that. It is quite a banger, that.
Oh,
I think I'm going to release it and say, yo, so it'll be available to get.
Yes.
With a B-side on it on the other side called Medusa.
And I said I would.
Both made by Ill Move Sporadic.
Yes. Big ups, Ill Move Sporadic, IMS. All right. Yes. So there was two people who won the Fliptrix CD and the Fliptrix tape.
Flip to the so tricks.
I picked up H3. He said, "You don't know nothing about no Walkman, bruv. tape, please. Yeah. He wants the tape. So you get the tape, brother. Hit us up on Instagram. I'll send that to you. And then the next one, the CD goes to Flynn K4J, FLYNN-K4J. That's his YouTube handle. Hit us up on Instagram. You've won the CD. He said, looks like the E is breastfeeding off the S. That's from your graph critique.
Is the graph critique.
Themes graph criticism cracks me up. My best friend is a huge fan of Flippy from his early days of Flip Tricks. If you pick me, I'd give it to him. We are both writers from Newcastle. All right.
And they're from the tune, man!
From the tune. Big up Flynn, K4K.
Oh, you didn't have to see all that.
And H3. Hit us up. Let us know, and I'll send you those CDs and tape to you guys, man. Much love. Let's go out to this OC. Oh yeah, everyone, leave a comment, leave a like, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, leave us some juicy comments.
What do they win if they leave a comment? This.
Well, I was thinking we're going to go to Chrome and Black. I was just thinking about that when you were just doing your little roundup there. Mm. Our mate Ben from the BBC. That was Arms House to your mum's house.
I tell you what.
I was thinking we need to go C&B.
Yeah.
I need to buy some shit anyway and then get a couple of bits. We say cowboy, bruv.
Yeah, but we
couple of bits.
Not for this episode. Let's think of a...
No, not for this episode. For this episode, you have to be lucky that we're fucking here doing it for everyone's benefit and listening pleasure. It's a sensational bit of kit. All you have to do is log in every Wednesday and listen to fucking Arms House.
You. So leave a comment below, party people. Let's go out to this tune. A classic, I think, slept on album by OC, who's part of DITC, Digging in the Crates. He's down with, you know, Pharrell Munch, all them lot. He's an ill fucking MC, man. He did an album called Word Life. I love that album. Word. You can't skip any tracks on there. It's a sick one. This was a track produced by Buckwild, the title track called World Life, son.
Arms House episode 97. Three more till the big one, baby.
A graffiti podcast called Arms House to Your Mum's House. Arms House to Your Mum's House. Arms House to Your Mum's House.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let the charm be a part of your mind. Let the rhyme intertwine like a vine. Work your mentally found intellect. I raise eyes like the sight of a tech. Let's take a trip inside of my thoughts. Will I persevere on the mic like sports? Take me in stride, OC's worth listening. Watch the tricks of a hoe who's a vixen. Tender eyes that only lead into a hard on. Touching tongue state, two to be a part on. I'm max relaxed, move it out like a sax. One of my goals is to make fast stacks. Then I flip the money to establish a business. This here beat, you see, I already quizzed it. I gave it a test for the rhyme linguistics. Honey, wanna kiss, gotta remove the lipstick. I dig lips with natural juices. Soft and lickable now, rough and ruthless. Because of many people I've been denied. Gas in my tank taking me for a ride. But I'm all right now, smooth as the turnpike. Cause of my squad organized and searchlight. Meditate daily, I do, so I sort. Things I consider in my mind is deep thought. Chance if a nigga has flavor.
Do you think I need to go and paint that yellow BR, bruv?